There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our Union down. But our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our Union's gonna break them slavery chains.
I walked up. Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of fantasy that itself is a synthesis between Fallout, the Papa Game, already post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
One of these days, we are going to break you of this unrelenting streak of informality. The proper title is Sir Weirdington Esquire. As you should well know, but as ever you remain an irascible anarchist. Well, Fi, what did we do last week?
Hey! This is an opposite day.
Oh, damn it, it's regular day. It's right there on the cattle. But the problem is,
as is the often the case with these checkers, neither of us remember what the fuck happened last week.
I know where it ended, but I don't even remember how we got there. We found out that the shadow the bat ponies have been residing in their own shadow realm, like a David Bowie's Labyrinth Castle, floating in a Stygian darkness.
If folks are familiar with
been like kidnapping like horses to like it's.
So if folks are aware of the popular game of Dungeons and Dragons, in its cosmology there's the Shadow Plane. This is near identical to its description. It's just like. Everything is just kind of like moving, like it's made a lava lamp, but it still kind of makes it sort of physical sense. And it's like physically related to the regular plane, but it's like kind of off kilter. Someone brought up in the spoiler chat because we have a spoiler chat on my Discord, so that Weird doesn't get spoiled on events. Someone brought up the fact that everything about the bat ponies is identical to the. Like character and backstory of the like dark elves from the Warhammer 40K franchise.
This is probably not an accident. Yeah.
No. Well, because someone brought up the fact that apparently Steel Rain is like deliberately like a space marine, basically.
Oh god damn it!
Like I don't know if they were like a space marine, like OC or something.
There's like a pretty boy chapter of the Space Marines.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That they're vampires. There's the pretty boy chapter of the good guys Space Marines have this thing where they cannibalize people. But the wiki goes on for like at extreme length about how noble they are and how tragic their bloodlust is. It's a bit of a secret. To the noble warrior hearts. but yeah, no, I think I'm not remembering that. Like that, at least in the Warhammer fantasy thing, the gimmick with the dark elves is that they have like magic castles that like appear out of nowhere in a veil of mist, and they kidnap people during the short time that the castle manifests in the real world, and then it disappears again. And then once they're done using those people for livestock and various entertainment, they
unspeakable
manifest again.
Horrors.
Yeah. Fucking unspeakable horrors, like fucking
degenerate sexual acts. 40K is bad, by the way. Welcome back to our podcast within the podcast, where we drag on 40K for 40 minutes.
Oh man, the hate is strong and pure.
Yes, it is.
So anyway, yeah.
BJ's been banished to the Ghost Dimension, the Phantom Zone, the Shadow Plane.
Hanging out with dark elves. You know, being fine with the worst of it, even though like this is like I don't know, she.
She even calls attention to how it's like identical to Stable 99.
Yeah, which should like,
Prompt
maybe
some sort
trigger
of emotional.
something, yeah, in
Yeah.
response, like maybe start kicking, kicking Bat Horse skulls in, like, doing something heroic. She's pretty indifferent. Oh, it's just nostalgic. I, Blackjack, have grown as a character not one bit.
Man, so I think about this often, but I think one of my favorite moments in all of Full Equestria, and it's one of those moments that people really harp on, is in the original story. There's a part in it where like Little Pip basically is just like dusted off her hooves and after killing one of the like major tyrant factions in the setting, and then she looks over to like the giant camp of slavers and went like, "I'm killing that next." Like apropos of nothing, like there's no motivation, like she has no skin in the game for doing it. She just looks over at like the biggest villain in the entire setting and been like, "That guy's head's gonna be on a pike." Little Pip is definitionally Praxis.
That's
She
so
is.
good. Meanwhile,
It's.
Blackjack is so bad. Like, even putting aside the morality of it, putting aside like her supposed like moral growth, I don't know if that's even supposed. Like, shouldn't she at least like be getting flashbacks to like when she was useless and universally hated? Like outside
Yeah.
of the moral crime, and like she's long since like had to like come to terms with and like. Am I misremembering this? Didn't she like have to atone for the rape? Like, didn't she like didn't like wasn't she confronted with that and like made some like noises that like
Indicate an
that wasn't
apology.
okay?
Yeah, I mean, I
And so setting that aside, if she feels like she's at home again, but also in a Stygian shadow dimension in fucking Silent Hill, like shouldn't she like be on the back foot, like remembering the days of being a universally despised fail daughter.
Oh no, this is just like one of those dreams. I'm back at school again. And I'm in my underwear. Well, the thing I was gonna bring up is that this is just more of that like horrible liberal fantasy where like problems aren't systemic, they're personal. Like BJ apologized to her rape victim, so it's okay now. And that's the end of it.
And
It
she's under
varies.
no obligation to like try to like make a world where that doesn't happen,
Nope.
like not
She
do
already said she was
not turn a
sorry and she was
blind eye
forgiven.
to it.
That's it. That she said she was sorry and was forgiven. That's it.
Anyway, so this is probably the second moment that's Somber has been holding his dick with bated breath over. The first being like. The opportunity to finally and totally erase Little Pip's adventure and ride it over with his own, like completely supplant K-Cat's work with turning the mysterious black pony into his own OC,
Yes.
who's very deep, I assure you. We get the second seminal moment. We finally meet Golden Blood. We encounter the author himself in a figurative and literal sense. Both the author of everything bad that has ever happened in Somber setting, the progenitor of literally everything wrong, and also himself, the author, like his pony self or insert OC.
You can almost use this moment to say something about the story.
So Fi, yeah, we left on a cliffhanger, face to face with the devil. And
Well, we
what
haven't
does he
gotten there
say?
yet. She's just like,
Really?
I'm gonna get there. She
Fuck! What? God
Yeah.
damn it!
She has to go back. I guess we should start this chapter. Chapter 67, Golden Blood.
I can't even. I almost want you to do a direct. Like, I want to know, like, what, like, Like, how can you be that comprehensively incompetent? You, if you're gonna write a goddamn cliffhanger, like
the cliffhanger was her thinking about it.
God, fucking.
There's no
incompetent.
There's no tension in the story.
You know, I'm gonna waste a little time. If this is important. The other day, I was thinking about opening a podcast by introducing myself as Dr. Winning. Fine, I have achieved a wholeness. I have achieved awareness of myself. I have no reason to get angry at this man's work. It people take their own joy from it, and he participated in the sublime act of creation. It fulfilled a need for him, and there's no reason that I should be upset by that. But just the sheer incompetence, Fi! Like, this work is taken, like, it's poisoning people. Like, I can't...
It is rotting people's brains.
Least of all mine! I don't know how you can be this bad!
Yeah, it's sort of impressive, frankly. There's no tension, there's no stakes, there's nothing to look forward to chapter. I guess I should get into it, though. Chapter 67, Golden Blood. I titled this one the All According to Plan episode. If you're just tuning in, folks, Weird has gone feral. Oh, man. Okay, so I'm going to start this off with Weird One. I don't hate this very beginning, but it's for, like, the weird kind of meta reading into it that I often take with Blackjack's, like, struggle. Because she's, like, in the inky blackness of the world, and, like, Tenebrae, which is Stygius' sister, like, found her in the darkness, and she's kind of just not really having a conversation with her, but she's kind of, like, there while BJ is having a huge, like, she's just yelling about how fucked up and bad her life is. The scene kind of still works for me, even though it's like it's another one of those instances of Blackjack just more or less just retelling the entire plot of the story again in a way that just sounds really whiny. There's just, I don't know, there's just like an energy to the way the writing is that I can kind of like vibe with, like man, like a lot of just bullshit just happened to me and I don't really know what to deal with it. And she's just mad and frustrated at the world around her in a way that isn't like. Like, so I guess what it is that usually when this happens, Blackjack is immediately torn down by somebody else doing the, like, there are starving children in Africa routine to her. Like, oh, don't think you have it so bad. Somebody else has got it worse. It's like, she's just allowed to, like, actually just vent about her problems. Because, admittedly, her problems are pretty fucked up. A lot of bad shit has happened to her. She's been violated in ways...
bad.
She's been violated in ways that she didn't know was possible up until 20 minutes ago. And, like, there's this, like, moment of, like, writing, like, it works for me, even though, like, it probably shouldn't, where she's just, like, mad and furious, and then she just kind of, like, grumbles to herself, and she's like, I think I took my fucking cutie mark. And it's just, like, and it's, like, it's this, like, moment of, like, sort of defeat that I kind of really vibe with, where she's just so, like, she's been so laid bare that even, like, they've robbed her of everything, like, even her essence. Like, it's like, they even took the thing that made me special. Which, like, in a weird meta reading, you could almost, like, you could almost relate that to the experience of reading, having, like, this is similar to the meta experience of listening to Somber constantly grind the protagonist down to a nub over and over and over again, so that because we're told, like, endlessly how, like, useless and garbage Blackjack is, and, like, in a weird meta way, like, it really, like, it actually really bothers me. Like, it actually does really affect me on, like, a personal level, listening to, like, you know, I've joked about this before, but, like, I hate Somber's writing so much, it makes me want to stick up for the characters, because it's hard not to get, like, defensive about, like, it's like, well, you did, like, Blackjack, you did everything bad, like, you ruined everything, and I just want to be like, hey, now, that's not fair, you don't get to talk to her like that. Hey, she's been through a lot. like, it's weird, like, it's despite everything, like, it's not like I like the character, I just, like, really just, I'm so frustrated by the, like, the interactions, but, like, this moment just still kind of just works for me. It's the only time, like, it's the only time Blackjack has ever felt like she's been allowed to be, like, upset.
Yeah, it's the only time, like, her pain is legitimized and acknowledged.
Because, like, Tenebrae is just there to kind of just sort of, like, absorb it and not really have, like... She doesn't, like, comment on it. She doesn't tear
her
down. She doesn't
own her with facts and logic. Like, just...
Yeah, she's just... Like, in a weird... Like, even though she doesn't do anything, she's almost just there to just kind of just be there for Blackjack in a way that literally none of her friends can. And I don't know, this scene just works for me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that does sound nice.
But it's this is my one good thing about the chapter. Everything else about this sucks.
Oh man. Oh man.
So take this fleeting moment of good and like a whisper into the night.
Hey, honey, here's a chocolate covered cherry. Oh, that's nice. When you're done with that, it's time for your dick flattening.
Yes. That's me every fucking Thursday. But yeah, I just kind of, like, I sometimes want to just try to focus on, like, things I thought worked for me, and this scene definitely did. Then BJ gets to interact with a death ghost. So this idea is really interesting. It's probably stolen from something else that I haven't heard of, but as they're wandering through the, like, through the weird, ineffable, arbitrary wasteland of the Shadow Plane, they, like, come across a thing called an echo that, like, is basically just, like, it's like a stuck point in time of someone's last dying moments that just kind of, like, got stuck in the Shadow Plane somehow. And, like, the Bat Ponies, like, avoid these places like the plague because, like, going into them traps you in the last moments of someone's death, and that's so traumatizing that either, like, your heart gives out or you're just irreparably damaged forever. A goofy moment where, like, BJ just falls into it and she's just like, I've had worse. Even though that's annoying, like, that it's annoying to have a character who's like, I've experienced so much sadness and trauma that I just don't get affected by this. It's like being exposed to too much poison. Like, that's dumb, but at the very least, this is a scene that acknowledges Blackjack having any expertise at all in any field or any ability that isn't beyond just shooting. Combat.
Yeah.
She has suffered so much suffering that, like, and she's died so many times, the experience of dying isn't anything new to her, and she's resisting it, is at least an interesting idea.
It's something that could have, should have showed up a while ago.
It should have showed up as a triumphant moment where they're trying to take her soul out, and she's like, nah.
Fool, I have been at one with the orb force!
The orbs are part of me now. So then they go into a really big stable. So they go back to the castle. There's a lot of discussion about, like, the dumb physiology and biology and history of bat ponies, that they've basically just been breeding themselves out of existence. A bunch of them have a bunch of genetic defects. None of this is important. It's not interesting. It's just padding to make this chapter longer.
Trivia. Sombra has some fun ideas he can't shut up about.
One of them is incest for some reason.
Oh yeah, for some reason.
But it turns out that that Nightmare Castle, which is the name of this castle, was built on top of a super stable called Project Redoubt, which is one of the OIA stable. It's one of the OIA projects. It was meant to be something of like a weird fallout shelter to end all fallout shelters, because it's shunted into another plane of existence, so there's no, like, nothing can touch it, which is an interesting idea. And it was never used. Like, that's the caveat of it. It's like a, so there is kind of a spooky thing of them going through it, and, like, it self seals, and it's just all, like, empty and completely untouched. And because they're in the Shadow Plane, it doesn't even have, like, dust or anything. It's just an empty, perfectly pristine building, which is kind of haunting. But then we have to do fucking puzzles. Oh, man, so I wasn't sure going into this how I was going to explain this, but Blackjack has to, like, interacts with the security system for this stable, and it gets told that the only way to get to Golden Blood is that she needs to prove herself worthy, and the way that she does that is she has to know the answers to these, like, basically trivia. Like, meaningless trivia about gold. Well, it's important in air quotes. It's trivia about Golden Blood.
Jesus.
Because the security system will only let in somebody that would be 100% guaranteed to kill Golden Blood. And in Golden Blood's mind, the only person that could do that is someone who's experienced his life. Which, I mean, like, a creed, but like it's it's a ridiculous what level even, of like
what even man shit the great and powerful Oz vibes are like through the fucking roof, like
yeah,
this the level of like man the psychology at work here that like that he has like a super sophisticated high tech security system designed not to preserve his life but to preserve him from conversation with lesser minds.
He can only enter the only person who would be someone who knew him intimately enough to want to kill him. That's the only way.
Mind-boggling. Like mind-boggling. Like and also like how long has he been behind this vault? Like by
200 years.
Like shouldn't she like have to it would actually be really subversive and funny if she does answer his riddles 3 and go through his whole fucking gauntlet to get to him, and like when she gets there it's he's like one of those vampires in that dwarf fortress story, like he's gone complete, like he's chewing on the walls and like basically a vegetable. Just gone completely feral from lack of all personal contact for 200 years. But no, I expect she'll pass his fucking gauntlet due to all of her exposure to him specifically related orbs. The whole fucking architect from the Matrix it up, like. Maybe right down to being just like fucking horse Colonel Sanders. Let's swivel chair. All right.
Well, let's get into it, shall we?
The way
that they do this, the way that this plays out is, they have, BJ like has to like interact with like the puzzle and like has to like go into a memory orb and then like see the memory orb and like glean information from it to be able to like answer whatever the puzzle is, and all of them like do trauma to her brain because they're locked, which is a thing that came up like literally hundreds of chapters ago at this point. So God, there's so many, these are all so fucking dumb and revisionary. So the first one is the Little Horn Massacre, which is the like inciting incident which triggered off the war. I've talked about this a couple of times before in the story. It's from the original story as well. Little Horn Massacre was a school destroyed by, like, it got, like, dirty bombed, basically. Like, it got, like, bombed by, like, zebra terrorists, with air quotes. And that's what triggered the entirety of the events, because they killed a bunch of children and, like, they went to war. It's more complicated than that, but that's basically the gist of it. And this, it frames it that the fucking zebra terrorists / refugees were, of course, the one that actually set off the bomb was the fucking legate, Dr. Amati, because it's just the way this whole thing goes, and everyone dies except for Golden Blood from this, because turned him into a ghoul, basically. Turned him into a pink cloud ghoul, because that's what the bomb was. It was pink cloud, which I don't have time to go into. So it's like, okay, that gives the puzzle that, oh, Amati's the person that did this or whatever. Like, I don't remember the actual solutions to this puzzle. It doesn't fucking matter. These memories are super fucking stupid.
Wouldn't it be cool if there was a terrorist attack at this fucking school that I substitute teach at, and all of these brats died horribly, and I became an immortal death ghoul?
Wouldn't that be nifty? And my only survivor, like the only survivor from that class, was a person I basically adopted as my own daughter. Oh, fuck. Okay, they do that. Then we go into a memory orb about Twilight Sparkle, which is fucking ridiculous.
Sombra, the tailor lied to you. The threads aren't gossamer. You are naked.
Balls exposed. We go into a dumb memory orb about Twilight Sparkle, who's drinking at a bar, and she's very sad. Because this is just after Big Macintosh died, and like, of course, this is a ridiculous scene where Twilight is thinking about quitting, and of course, like, This is GB, like, going in to be like, well, if you want to quit, I'm not going to stop you, but I'm definitely going to neg you into doing it, into not leaving anyways. And more or less, like, incepts the idea of the Gardens of Equestria in her brain and the Alicorn Project, which are things from the original story, because of course he did.
I mean, yeah.
Like, it's not even worth really saying anymore, but, like, of course everything, like, systematically every single thought that a character has ever had was actually Goldenblood in the background manipulating them.
I'm really thrown by the meta, like, crossover of, like, Goldenblood is the only character with agency in the entire world because he is the author.
Like, yeah, it's really weird. There are only two characters in this story, Goldenblood and Blackjack, and the Blackjack only exists to be, like, tortured by Goldenblood.
Extinction of...
Honestly,
oh my god, like, Goldenblood, like, episode one or two, you were saying that, like, isn't it a shame that, like, Blackjack might be an interesting character deep down, but she's at the whims of a capricious god. And now, like, here, almost at the end, like, Somber is about to make it canonical that his immediate, direct, naked self-insert is the architect of every moment of her life.
Like, yeah, it's sort of incredible. It's like, this is where, like I said, that the story goes places, but I don't think by intention. Like,
yeah,
The story turned into this weird, crazy, psychedelic meta meditation on itself, but it didn't intend to. Like Summer just wanted to write a story about how cool it is that he's, like, got a big penis and everyone loves him. But, like, because of the way that this is all framed, like, it's hard not to read this as this, like, insane, psychosexual, self-inflicted journey where, like, a capricious and evil god is also, like, a goofy, self-absorbed, narcissistic teacher who's, like, bullying this random girl kind of just for existing. And it's just, it's like,
God, man. Fast. Yeah. I cannot see it. I see it.
You have entered the fight.
The sun.
This is
what you were talking about, like, a year ago.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it wild?
Fire's been talking about this for a long time in only the vaguest terms, but now we are confronted with this full eldritch terror.
This is an incredible piece of fiction, but not for any of the reasons it actually intends. Oh, man. God. I love this podcast. I love doing this podcast. But anyways, who cares? He incepts Twilight in doing whatever, we obviously. But so instead we get a third memory orb, because of, you know, rule threes and all that. And it's a ridiculous revision of Pinkie Pie that's kind of frustrating. So, like, in the original story, one of the big themes of the original story is how... Well, the ministries kind of got bad, partly as a, like, extension of all of the ministry mayors, you know, the main six getting, like, losing their friendship and it destroying them and then subsequently corrupting the world around them. One of the sort of, like, actions that happened with is that, like, Pinkie Pie, obsessed with trying to, like, outpredict the enemy, became, like, a massive drug addict in an effort to try and, like, extend her perception into, like, true, like, divination. And, like, she almost killed herself doing that. Like, she had, like, a massive overdose and almost died. And, like, her dying days were dedicated to trying to repairing her relationship with her friends by, like, creating memory orbs and all sorts of complicated bullshit to try and, like, repair that damaged relationship, but it was obviously too late, and then the war, like, ended the world, so there's no way of fixing that anyways. And it's a really tragic moment, and instead, in this thing, we find out that everything Pinkie Pie ever did was a joke. Specifically, Goldenblood allowed Pinkie Pie's thought police to exist because they were useful, Goldenblood specifically. And then with no effort, completely usurps her from her position, which is super cool.
Jesus.
And
wow.
In a moment,
wow, my dude.
Yeah. And in a moment of proper frustration with Pinkie Pie, because she's the way she is, he forced a bunch of her drugs down her throat, and that's what the overdose was. And
this is attempt to murder her for being
yes,
being too cute.
Yeah, it wasn't a. It
wow,
wasn't a
somber man. Don't touch me.
Never, don't touch me.
Never get your pallid, rotting corpse flesh near me.
Never speak to me or my children, who you wrote, but I decided to adopt.
Yeah, never mind again. Now. I'm taking them into protective custody, you fucking freak.
Yeah. So instead of it being a theme about the idea of excess and abuse and self-destruction, it's now just a murder plot, which is very cool. She vomits out a bunch of mystical prophecy bullshit, where she predicts a bunch of the events that have happened in the story already, and gives Golden Blood a big spook because she can see that he's being manipulated by the Eater of Stars, which is something he didn't even know. And then he okay, I guess I have to explain something else that happens in the original story. So for some reason, kind of as a joke, Pinkie Pie had these like magic mirrors invented that show up really late into the story that like see people as they truly are, and they show you like a vision of like your true self, and it's used in the original story to like scare the shit out of Little Pip because she's starting to become a monster, and in this just so that GB can see that like, oh yeah, I am being possessed, which is like what caused him to create the like end all button, the Project Horizons to nuke the world and start over from scratch.
That's really funny to me. That's really fuck. Okay. So this motherfucker, this comprehensively shitty person, looks into a magic a universal portrait of Dorian Gray and sees exactly what he's expected to see. He sees his own self, but with a ghost manipulating accountability eating ghost.
His stand floating behind him, which I really need to stress the fact that like, because the Eater of Souls is based off of a real kind of reactor, which I've been told is in the shape of a toric. I don't know what that really is, but whatever. Which is basically a donut. So he just has an evil donut floating over him.
That absorbs all accountability for his every wrongdoing, including attempting to murder someone in
mere moments ago.
In a fit of pique, because they're too cute.
Yeah, she's too annoying and like Pinkie Pie like.
So in a fit of pique, he murders her with drugs. But don't worry, I've looked into the soul mirror and seen that everything bad I've done is the result of this donut ghost.
This donut steal. Oh man, we haven't even gotten to the good part of this chapter. Well, I guess not even the good part. A friend brought it up, like how sort of weirdly like a wet fart this whole chapter is. It's kind of weird, but we'll get into it in a hot second. So BJ unlocks the three magic.
Wouldn't it be cool if he looked in the mirror and like almost instantly like his fur went gray with the shock, like his like smoke form began to dissolve with the sheer ego death of having to confront his unspeakably hideous core nature. Wouldn't that have been a thing? Anyway.
Or he just looks in the mirror and there's nothing's different. Yeah. This was you the whole time. All right. She unlocks the magic box. She's been like, it's like, it says like, congratulations, executioner. It doesn't phrase it like, it doesn't say that specifically, but it's like, dumb buzzword that BJ doesn't believe about herself. It's like, it's trying to do a thing, but it doesn't, it's kind of too obvious. Oh man, we got a dumb sequence where basically like the AI and the thing is like, yeah, you have to kill him. And here's a variety of ways to kill him because you've been proven to be like someone who is knowledgeable enough of Golden Blood and have the resolve to be capable of killing him. This is all some sort of weird execution punishment. And she's like, nah, I'm not going to kill him. And then like a bunch of guns flip out, which like kind of has a sort of comic timing of just like, you have to kill him. I refuse. Guns fall down. Maybe I'll kill him.
It is, again, the sole purpose of this entire apparatus is a vault to protect him from conversations. The only interaction from another person he wanted ever again when he built this was someone who would kill him because he's too much of a chicken shit to do it himself.
Yep. But her whole thing is like, no, I want to ask him some questions first, and then maybe I'll shoot him. And she manages to like convince the system that she's basically like, because he's like in a sensory deprivation tube that like feeds him like a complex memory horror thing that's constantly making him relive it, like torture for centuries and centuries. BJ's like, okay, I guess you plug me into that so that I can like. She like I do kind of like the finesse of like she convinces it with like if you send me in there I can find God, an even better way to kill him.
Sad violin dot wave. God fucking damn it.
But yeah, he's...
Oh my God, I can't even make that joke. He literally put sad violin dot wave he intended unironically to be an emotional height. God damn it!
Takes everything from you.
I have nothing.
Oh man, this chapter has been an emotional ride. So she goes into the torture dimension. The sequence is insanely stupid. I remember this one like from memory. Like I don't even really have it down as a note because it's burned into my core because of how eye-rollingly stupid it is. So he's Golden Blood is forced to relive the moments before the war, like his like last days before the apocalypse, where he is brought up to execution, and then it turns out that the whole execution was a farce. He's instead teleported into a cell because they're gonna like interrogate him harder, but that doesn't work out because literally as that's happening, Cantalot is being attacked by like a magic biological agent and it kills everybody more or less. But since it's Pink Cloud, he's also immune to it, so he just kind of gets off scot-free from this whole execution thing happening, which is profoundly stupid. There's a fucking ridiculous exchange close to the end of FOE. I'm just going to have to spoil this, but I've talked about this before because I was mad about it at the time, but like he finds Rarity in her office, and like Rarity had died. Like, basically, like, as the Pink Cloud was happening, like, Rarity's, like, final moments of before being consumed by the cloud was to, like, profess her undying love to Fluttershy. Like, she's always loved her, and then Fluttershy, like, repeats it back. And then Rarity uses her last moments of life to teleport her away. Like, just as far away as she could possibly could. And it's a really, like, sentimental and tragic moment, and because she's like being exposed to the Pink Cloud, so she can't move because she's like physically fused with a window at the time, and it's really horrible and sad. So apparently she didn't die yet, so that Golden Blood can have some dying words with her because he's trying to figure out where Fluttershy is, you know, because he still cares about her, obviously. And there's a ridiculous scene, like a ridiculous, like this is on level of like when historians write letter, like write theories about women who write letters to each other as just gals being pals, because like she's like she's like, well, I would do anything for a friend, and it's like somber. You annihilated the queer representation in FOE for no reason. Why did you do this? Well, it's because you have a weird fetish for Fluttershy, because a lot of the audience did, but like...
They're lesbians, dear.
Herald, they're lesbians. but she's just, and then she just kind of like dies being like telling him vaguely where she tried to teleport him to, and then like I don't remember how he gets out of the sequence. I think he either just leaves or gets teleported himself or some fucking shit. I don't know. Who gives a shit? I don't care about how this all plays out. And then there's like a ridiculous scene where like Fluttershy is like in a forest, the apocalypse happening, and Golden Blood is like
trying to get to. Oh, the moment is completely gone. Somber, queer ally! Mandatory contract obligation fulfilled. There we are.
Yes. So he's like trying to get to Fluttershy and he gets beaten back by the dumb bunny from the show. It doesn't, none of this fucking matters. It's just, it's all stupid bullshit. BJ sees the whole simulation like play out and then she like talks to Golden Blood. There's a sequence that I don't remember how this plays out, but there's like a dumb thing where like she's talking to Golden Blood, but then she realizes she's not talking to Golden Blood. She's talking to the security system again. And then the real Golden Blood shows up. I don't remember how this actually spins out this way. It's all stupid, frivolous bullshit.
So he wasn't in the torture box after all?
No, he was.
Outside of the torture box, there is...
No, he was, but the security system would like wanted to like 100% confirm that BJ was going to kill him, and like projected like a rude version of Golden Blood, basically. But that gets dispelled by the actual Golden Blood, who's just like, "Hi, I'm here to tell you about all of the dumb bullshit in this story." So this character's the worst, as we often know. They have a dumb conversation that just has like nothing to do. Like it's nothing about this matter. It's like it's like we don't even really get that much exposition from this. He just kind of like there's this casual thing where like BJ like cottons on to like, oh, when I ended up in that weird dreamscape, you know, that episode that we just completely skipped. When I ended up in that weird dreamscape and had my brain fixed by psychic robots. That was you, and I don't understand how she figured that out or like how he would do that, but apparently he's like connected to the system, which is maddening. I think so for a really long time I thought that there's a bunch of sequences in this story where Cognitum is trying to do something, like basically she flicks on a switch and then immediately another force flicks it off. And I guess for a really long time, I just assumed that was the Eater of the Souls. But I guess through the implication of what Golden Blood is saying, it's been him this entire time. He's also been secretly guiding Blackjack this entire time by like helping her here and there and giving her access to things that she shouldn't have access to. And she's been like watching him he's been watching her this entire time through the Pip Book. And so like he's already caught up on everything that's happening. So we don't need to go through the explanation of Blackjack explaining the plot GB.
But so this means that he indeed has not had his brain like helplessly flooded with just this memory. Like
apparently he's had downtime. I guess
he's everywhere.
He's given a smoke break. I guess his union mandated smoke break.
Somber super doesn't believe in unions.
Like, no, I'd there's no way.
Money on. Yeah, he he's on this. He'd masturbate to watching the Pinkertons like shoot striking workers.
But yeah, he's been apparently been manipulating the events of everything up to this point, which makes like this is one of those things where I was talking about this, and it's like the sequence doesn't even really hit that hard. Like it doesn't even really infuriate me because this is like what like the fourth character that's told us that everything has been going according to Keikaku, like. He's done it, Cognitum's done it, the Eater of Souls has done it, and Lighthouse has all done it. Like, every single one of them unveils that everything BJ's been doing has been all part of this complicated Xanatos gambit. Just go on TV Tropes to look it up. And everything they've been doing has all been secretly towards their plot. And it's just like, I just don't care anymore. Like, you've done this trick so many times that I can't even be like, frustrated at your bad writing about it.
And they're spaced out far enough that you don't get the like giddy brain melting thrill of the end of Metal Gear Solid 2, wherein someone tells you that like the real truth of everything that's been going on, and then he's shot in the head by a Metal Gear, and the pilot climbs out and explains to you the real truth of what's going on, and then his arm possesses him and explains to you the real truth of what's going on, and then the president
blows the president up was there
and explains to you the real truth of what's going on,
and then the nanites in your brain that are actually the ghosts of the original Continental Congress explain to you the real truth of what's going on.
God, welcome to our Metal Gear podcast, our podcast within a podcast.
But yeah, so it just doesn't really matter.
Rather than like complete Kojima of madness.
Yeah, it's not even like hyperbolic enough to be madness. It's like yeah, whatever, sure. Sure, you've been conspiring this entire time to make sure everything was going exactly the way you wanted it to. That's super cool. Sure. And then he's also like a thing that I don't. He says a thing I don't understand how it matters. But he's like, oh yeah, there's a spirit inside the moon rock. There's like an explanation of what the actual plan of Horizons was. It's basically like he was going to fire the moon rock. He was going to fire the moon rock at the Eater of Souls and kill it like a silver bullet. And then the chain reaction of that happening was going to coat the earth in metal. And then all the other projects like the OIA was like doing was to make sure that life could restart anew after all of this happened. And it's just like, I'm only saying this just to kind of like highlight, like, so this is literally the third plan we've heard from a third different person who's like, haha, this is how I will use the magic rock to fix all the problems in a way that also invalidates the Guardians of Questria somehow again. And I'm just like, sure. I don't know. I think one of the things, like, and that's more or less the end of this chapter. And I think like, cause, like, there's some thing about it. Like, I don't remember if it's in this chapter or in the chapter going after this. Like, I'm pretty hazy on the end of this. Even though I literally read this again like 20 minutes ago. Like, it's just, or I guess 50 minutes ago plus 20 minutes ago. It's just so hard to remember this fucking plot line. But like, I think one of the craziest things to think about is like eventually Golden Boy gets set free. Like, BJ doesn't shoot him. Because I'm missing in a very vital vital part. I just glazed over it. But there's also this ridiculous like back and forth between the two of them where Golden Blight's like, ah yes, my executioner's here, now I can finally die. And Blackjack's like, nah, I'm not gonna kill you. And he's like, but I did all these bad things. I made the world worse. I did all, like, if it was not for me, all this bad stuff wouldn't have happened. And we get like the most wrong Blackjack has ever been in the entire story, and maybe ever. She goes, it's not about you. Listeners, they go into there's a long back and forth between the two of them where Blackjack says, you are not culpable for every single thing that is bad that has ever happened in the story. There are broader circumstances that led into this happening. There's no way you could have done literally everything. In the same way that there's no way I could be literally blamed for everything I've ever done. The problem with that is that is not supported in the text. Yeah. Even a little bit on both sides.
On normal circumstances, in any other story, this would be a profound moment. Sombra, this is you. This is this is the architect of this entire world. Look,
this is a mind-meltingly meta sequence in which, like, the like torture effigy, the like horrible fucked up sex doll of the self-insert, essentially the author is telling the author, it's okay, this isn't your fault, and that's fascinating to me as a thing, like, well, like,
yeah,
this trauma toy, this like broken baby is patting Hitler on the back and telling him that, oh no, it's not really your fault. But also on a meta level, it's the effigy of Little Pip telling the self-insert author, essentially the writer of the story, that it's okay, none of this is your fault. And that's wrong, like, at so many levels, because, like, I mean, first and foremost, like, you wrote all those things, like, you wrote them into existence, like, you are actually the most to blame for the things that happen in your story. It's kind of how writing works. Like, you can't just, like, characters don't write themselves, you kind of have to make decided decisions on like how their personality works and how everything plays out. So like that's wrong. But also like in text, everything is wrong because like this story has painstakingly gone 67 chapters, even earlier in this chapter, to tell us that no, secretly everything that bad has ever happened has been Golden Blood's hands directly. He is actually at fault of every single thing that has ever happened. Kind of just sort of incredible how wrong the protagonist is in the moment.
I'm also sort of astonished by the, like, socialism for me and not for thee. Like, that, like, everything good that happens is the result of a singular visionary benefiting, like, giving their gifts to an unwashed mass. But, oh, war crimes, you say? Well, historical forces are contingent, not the fault of any single individual. Silly beans.
Silly Billy.
Oh, God. But, you know, that is transcendent. Like, that, like, it...
I could make a podcast about this scene alone.
Just this chapter. Like, yeah, just...
Yeah. Like, there's just so much to untangle. Like, we'll probably go back again when we do, like, the wrap-up and stuff. But, like...
Oh, man.
It's sort of incredible how, like...
The pathology is just naked. Like,
it's amazing. It's a beautiful piece of work in its own way. It's this crystalline madness, this sort of like unsettling unpleasantness. Like it's everything about this is so like anathema to like my sense of ethics and morals and how I think about writing at all. Like it's why I've been thinking about this for years. Like it's why I made this podcast is more or less this scene, or really just this kind of like,
you know, psychologically, emotionally, morally, it is good to find it within you to forgive yourself. But part of that seeking any kind of material atonement.
Yeah, seeking any sort of actual reconciliation with victims.
As opposed to like just. Self-forgiveness is not enough if you're going to stop it there. If you're going to be, yeah, like, all right with yourself, forgiving yourself, and indifferent to the consequences of the, like... Also, like, yeah, I'm of the opinion, like, I don't see people say this enough or express it enough, but, like, I'm very much of the opinion that forgiveness is not absolution. Like, it's all well and good to forgive. Like, you can forgive somebody who's done you a great and terrible wrong, but that doesn't mean that you absolve them of it. That doesn't mean that you're obliged to forget what they did.
Yeah, you don't, and you're also under no obligation to like forgive them in the first place either, just because someone's sorry.
So like the forgiveness part is something for your benefit because the like a grudge is a poisonous thing. Like it does more damage to you than it does to them more often than not.
Sure, so like, but I mean also
leaving that person behind on the bit, like leaving that person behind you emotionally, like being able to like detach your corrosive feelings is a healthy thing to be able to do, but that doesn't mean you have to trust them ever again. It doesn't mean that you have to like tolerate them in your presence.
It's frankly like I was talking about this in the spoiler chat as well, but like out of all the ways that this could possibly spin down, did anyone up to this point honestly believe that the way that this was gonna lay out is that like Golden Blood was gonna exist as a kind of bizarre last-minute mentor and father figure to Blackjack, of all things?
The signs were in the tea leaves.
There's
been a bunch of precursors. There's been a bunch of like prototypes for this, like the weird instant attachment she gained to King's sociopath in the society, like. That's the one that really sticks out, like the like her instant attachment to that character is a definite pre-shadowing of this. And though somber, almost certainly meant to be sincere, like in a parody of this work, in a more thoughtful like version of this, it would be like a dark sign of like it would be a dark foreshadowing moment of like Blackjack's like having a pathological need to want to like
to fill up a void.
Somebody is their like a daddy.
To fill the void that she specifically created. Because
they'd be vulnerable to this even bigger monster doing the same. But in this case, like not like somber, like it's gross. It's incestuous. It's we are like this is footage of somebody masturbating. Like this is like it's so naked. Like the emperor's new clothes metaphor has come up several times this episode, and it's so uncomfortably apt. Somber is showing his entire ass this chapter. Like yeah, it's super unsettling. Faya, is there anything else we could be consuming?
Christ, I don't know. I'm just going to say anything else because we're kind of running along again.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to like throw out?
Virtually anything else. Kill 6 billion demons is on a pretty hot streak with the current chapter. It's a pretty good a comic about... it's sort of a... if you know the French sci-fi comic Mobius, it's kind of like that, but a kung fu epic across a multiverse.
What if Mobius was an anime?
There's another podcast that I would recommend. I found out about recently, and I've been kind of enjoying it. Have you ever seen an episode of The West Wing? When you were younger, did you think that this was a decent show? Well,
whoops.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about how the West Wing, like a whole bunch of members of the Obama administration have outright said in interviews and stuff, like have made it that they got into politics because of watching the West Wing, and it kind of shows the podcast is called The West Wing Thing. And it's two authors, two Hollywood screenwriter types watching every episode, doing this podcast, but with The West Wing. Doing this podcast, but the fanfic is a fanfic of American politics written by one Aaron Sorkin.
Scary.
All of the shitty distortion of politics in the West Wing, it turns out to like be a very obvious precursor to the comprehensive failure of the Obama administration, and the dark world we now live in. Check that out, The West Wing Thing. I think the thing that I think sums up The West Wing Thing is, I recently listened to their end of their season one of The West Wing wrap up, and they talk about how when they began this podcast, they were expecting that they weren't going to make fun of the writing itself. Like Aaron Sorkin is a talented writer; everybody knows that. You hear it all the time. He's an award winner, but
oops,
might need to rethink that assumption about Aaron Sorkin's general level of competence.
Anything to recommend.
Have the courage and strength of will, you can contact us at my email address, which is weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Just double check to see if we have any fan mail today, and it seems that you are all weak. You have failed the challenge.
By the way, I would really say that since we're like getting close to wrapping up this project, like this part of the project in general, because we now have 10 episodes to do, and then we're done. So
that's a month and a half, though.
I would really like get your questions together and like Like, I'm really going to call again for them for this, like, when we do, like, the last two episodes of, like, hey, put together some questions you wanted to just sort of, like, ask to see that, because we didn't get to cover over the course of the...
Yeah, no, definitely help us make our sort of final episode of the first... The first
leg of this
season.
Race.
Yeah, the first... The inaugural project of the podcast. A big one. If you have emails that you would questions and stuff that you would like reserved specifically for the finale, I'll make it hard for you. Extravaganza in the subject line. Email us with your questions if you want them answered anytime. Just email us. Period. But if you want specifically for the finale, please put extravaganza in the subject.
Or horizons. Horizons would be a good one too. So that's kind of the whole gimmick of this last book.
The last horizon. I get it. No, that's very poetic and apt. This project doesn't deserve anything. That's sensible. Extravaganza. I'm putting my foot down. I'm very excited. I want you all have to Google the spelling.
But yeah, if you want to check out our Twitters, you can check out mine at ThouArtFi. My Twitter is extremely not safe for work. I'm a well-known lewd artist at this point. So if you can handle that, then check me out. I talk about politics and Kamen Rider and draw weird porn. And I'm generally friendly, except for when I yell at you. I don't yell at people very much. Also, you can like check out our Discord, where I have a permanently pinned tweet to my Discord that's always open. It's primarily an open, like a lewd one, but we have like a section just dedicated to this. Like, if you just want to like hang out and talk about like the podcast or FOE or horses in general, like we're really friendly.
In that case, we need to like ask Google to stop putting lewd horses in that channel.
I can just make it at our channel.
Yeah.
It's an 18 plus server.
I don't want
like
a dedicated lewd horse channel, Fi. I don't not like. I really enjoy your community and everybody who goes there, but I don't think I can participate if there's a lewd horse channel.
But I guess like obviously it's an 18 plus server. Like that's a given. You know, and if you want to check it out, like you'll have to do the dirty work of getting there because I'm not going to post it in this.
We do have Tokusatsu viewing parties and everything. That's
yeah.
Community is getting weird.
The community's great. I love our Discord. It's great.
Yeah.
If you want to check out Weird, who's considerably more, I was going to say normal, but that's kind of like definitionally
it's in the
false.
Name. It's pathological. I cannot help it.
A different kind of weird.
The current trend that I'm doing with my Twitter, if I'm doing anything at all, is just retweeting cute animals mostly. It's just retweeting cute animals and like random art tutorials and things. Like, I think I've taken Matt Christman's advice and I'm trying a new medication called the grill pill.
just want a grill.
I just want a grill, for God's sake. but the grill is a greater metaphor for praxis, you see. It's just go out there and create something, even if it's delicious meat. To face the despair of the world I just want a grill, for God's sake. In my case, grilling, for God's sake, means, you know, trying to produce more art, more written art, more retweets of cute animals. Anyway, Fi, this was bad. This was a bad chapter. Uh-huh. I think part of me died. Do you think this may have been some kind of terrible mistake?
If it takes them to tear the prices down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the prices down.